Right now, time to be joined by our good friends at The Berkshire Edge. TheBerkshireEdge.com is their website. One stop to find out what's going on in and around the South County and area like that. And also, by the way, an events calendar that is second to none in our area. And let us bring in the dynamic duo, Marcy and David.
Good morning.
Dynamic. Ooh,
dynamic,
I like that.
At 8:30 in the morning. I don't know. Well, kind of iffy.
I know, but Marshall, you must be up from. What time do you get to the station in the morning?
Well, I get up. I get up every morning at 3 o'clock because I have to take a series of medications since I've had this stem cell transfer. So it gives time for it to enact. So what I do is from like 3 o'clock to like 4 o'clock at the house, I pre-prepare. Then I get ready, shower, but come into work, so I'm in here by 5. But it's every day at 3 o'clock, except for Saturdays and Sundays. They're like days off. I don't have to get up till 6 o'clock those days.
Oh, my gosh. And what time do you go to bed?
Well, if I can time it perfectly, right around 8 o'clock. Because
right.
at 68, you know, at once in the middle of the night, I've got to get up.
Yeah, right. So you can go back to sleep, well, I assume.
As long as I get to bed around 8 o'clock. If it's earlier than that, for some reason, everything goes to hell in the handbasket, as they say. But anyway, enough about my nighttime prowess.
Well, and the stem cell is doing well.
It's my left knee, which was the far worst knee, is now probably about 70% less pain in it, and it's now made the right knee, which we're going to do it on next, far worse. So, but that's okay. I'm on crutches, and it's showing that it's working, and that's the main thing, where I didn't have to actually go in for a knee a replacement of my knee.
Right.
All right, well, let's get on to your stories here. The first one, my day at Ground Zero. You have Dr. Stephen White about this.
Well,
he's an Episcopal chaplain.
Very interesting man.
And has served in parishes in the Berkshires. But he tells about his, in commemoration of that anniversary of that terrible terrorist attack, we ran his account of where he was and what he did as he raced to
he was down there I think almost a month after the attack. He was asked, they were looking for chaplains to go down and work with the people who were working at Ground Zero. And so contemporaneously, in October of 2001, he wrote this sort of memoir of what his experience was that day.
Right.
It brought tears to our eyes when we read it. We've all been experiencing that over the last few days, and we put this up on Saturday the 11th. And it's very moving. It's worth reading even afterward because his message of hope is that in all of this disaster, you had people working to help, working at Ground Zero while fires were still going and while they were uncovering people and bodies were being revealed, but that. You know, he has a message of hope about the people who came to help.
And those people, a year later, I mean, because it was such a toxic site, it even made what they did even more impressive.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. Because I assume they must have known.
Absolutely. They must have been briefed that, you wear a mask and you do this and that. But still, it was such a toxic site, not only from toxic site of the death and the destruction, but for the future. And that's why the people that were at that site for so long deserve anything that the government can do for them. Anything. Because it was just truly astounding. It was astounding what they did. And two of the most impressive monuments in this country now are associated with death. If no one's been to the Vietnam War Memorial, go. I knew someone who passed away in it, and once you enter that memorial, it's just unbelievable. And, of course, the World Trade Center site.
There's another one, which is the Holocaust.
Well, that was going to be next on my list. That's not as current, but the great thing about the Holocaust Museum is it brings the people who don't know anything about it into the reality of it.
Right.
Museums are basically are for the old adage, you hope to learn from the past so it doesn't happen again in the future. Museums are terrific for that.
Yes, right.
Well, this is a great story. It really is. The recollection of somebody some 20 years later, you get to live it all over again and feel exactly the way you felt 20 years ago.
Who wants to live it all? To live it over again. But, boy, I must say, Saturday was not a pleasant day.
No.
Living that all over again.
It definitely isn't, but it's a day that we have to observe and recognize the people. The first responders who gave their lives. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
We had two other stories that same day. David didn't put on our list, but we had a very nice story by a local writer named Shane Engel, who had interviewed two local soldiers who had served in Afghanistan, talking about their experiences in Afghanistan.
Right.
And then we had also a wonderful poem by, a local poet from West Stockbridge, Leslie Klein. And she talked about being up on Lake Champlain, in a rented house, having a lovely vacation on a beautiful fall day. They were up early, just feeling so good about life and where they were, when suddenly, this paradise was ruined by the news. So she's got a very nice poem. So that was our September 11th coverage. And I must say, I am glad David put it on the list, because I'm reluctant to let go of it.
Yep.
I find one day really wasn't enough.
It's I don't want to compare it, but it's like Pearl Harbor. It's like any major event which affects the country's psyche as a whole. And if people don't realize that 9/11 has affected the country's psyche, even 20 years later, it's strongly affecting it. It just does every day. It doesn't go away, the effects of it.
Well, I recommend a program that Frontline did for PBS that you can get if you're a member of your PBS station. You can get it on the PBS Passport. And it draws a direct line between September 11th, 2001, and January 6th, 2021.
Absolutely.
In terms of loss of faith in government, fear, suspicion of outsiders and foreigners, it was a very powerful program.
All right,
and we were mesmerized by it, and it's not encouraging, I must say, but it's definitely worth watching.
All right, I want to move on to your next story because I like the way it begins. The state giveth and sometimes giveth not. And that's the grant for a road repaving project, but no money for schools.
Well,
the derelict school.
No, this is a school repair.
Yes,
but
an unused school.
Yes,
yes.
Well, it's state out of the blue, as a headline says. Great Barrington received a substantial amount of money to repair a stretch of road on that's near the airport. Maybe there's some connection there. But at the same time, the town needed some repair, some money to help repair the Housatonic Elementary School, which was, at one time, there were three elementary schools in Great Barrington serving various neighborhoods, and they consolidated them all into one larger and more modern elementary school a number of years ago. And the one in Great Barrington, in Housatonic, the little village within the town of Great Barrington, has been kind of derelict, and it needs some substantial money to repair the roof. That's what this is about.
Well, the town tries to figure out what to do with it, because they don't want to tear it down. It's right in the center of Housatonic. they feel that there is something that could be done with this building, either apartments or commercial space or a combination of both, and there have been a number of proposals floated.
Over the years, yes.
Over the years, none of them has stuck. And in the meantime, the building needs to be maintained, otherwise it's going to be destroyed. And, you know, and it needs the windows boarded up and the roof covered so that it doesn't deteriorate any further. It turns out that if the repairs cost more than $10,000, then the state requires you to solicit bids publicly and to consider at least three bids. Well, they only got one bid, and it was for $95,000. And the town thought this was going to cost $5,000 or $6,000, and this is the only bid they got. So now the town is faced with the dilemma of what to do. We don't have $95,000 to spend on this, but we can't allow the town, like the buildings or whatever, the town crew to clean it up, because it's going to cost more than $10,000. So it's a real dilemma. I mean, I was wondering, and when I read this article last night, if you couldn't just divide up the job into small pieces, like five windows at a time or something, so that each little job would be less than $10,000 and just have the town do it.
Well, the other thing is that this is in the little village of Housatonic, which is, has its own sense of identity wrapped up in this school building, which dominates really the center of town.
Yeah, it's like the beating heart, or not so beating heart, of the town.
Right. And so it's been a kind of icon of and a reminder of the grievances that Housatonic residents feel against the greater town, because they feel that their little village has been neglected. So it's sort of a symbol of that.
Now, whenever you take a building like that, it's like when the Canaan Depot burned down. It was the center of North Canaan, and the town just was not the same until now. It's years and years and years later, fully reestablished. And if you've got a school building that's huge, and in comparison to the size of the rest of the town, you don't want to take it down. You want to use it for some sort of multi-purpose facility, because it is the center of the town.
That's right.
Well, they haven't been able to figure out or adopt a proposal to reuse that building in some new creative way. And in the meantime, it needs a lot of
repairs,
aging, and it needs repairs.
Yeah, just to maintain it. Not to do anything with it. And, last night when I was reading this article, there are links to several other articles that we have done in the past, one of which was a viewpoint from the then executive director of the Community Development Corporation of Southern Berkshires, who talks about there are real possibilities of doing a combination of residential and commercial space, and somehow no one has picked up on that. because that's really what needs to be done.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, again,
we'll be revisiting this, I think.
Yeah, and you know, and always, you know, in this conversation with you, Marshall, we try to, you know, we realize that many of your listeners don't live in the, you know, in
but that doesn't matter, because the problems and the are the same. From town to town.
I mean, and so I wanted to just take the slightly larger view.
Yeah.
That, you know, this is what happens when you build, you know, bigger school, you know, what do you call them, district school, big buildings, and so, you know, consolidated schools, that you displace the flavor, or the spirit of the local town.
Yep.
And I'm not saying that you shouldn't have consolidated schools, but this is a consequence that people ignore until it's too late.
Yeah. I want to move on, because you've got the former Berkshire State Senator Dowling. He's going to be running for governor.
Ben Dowling, yes. You know, he comes from a well-known Berkshire family, and he's a Democrat, and he's announced his candidacy for governor. And hoping to take that off. He's been a state senator and a former state senator, and this is an interesting campaign. He's quite a dynamic fellow, so he's announced that he's a candidate. So we'll see what the.
And he's talking a lot about transportation.
Yeah, in this particular article, he was talking about transportation needs and public transportation needs in the Berkshires.
Because we do suffer here from the feeling that Boston doesn't actually know that
we exist.
That there's any state west of Springfield.
It's the mountains. You know, it's the mountains. When you're in Boston and you cast your eyes west, you know, there's these mountains that sort of block your view. And we're on the other side of those mountains.
Well, you know, that applies, that applies in Connecticut. The Connecticut ends at Torrington to most people. And in New York State, heading eastward, it ends in Poughkeepsie. So you've got this area, which really is its own separate area. That is.
Well, you know, every so often, someone will come up with the idea, which we have occasionally with a wink and a nod entertained, and that is that Berkshire County should secede and join Vermont.
That's right.
Because we would because our population is enough so that we would have quite a much more representative we would have more representatives in the state legislature than we do in Massachusetts, because there are not as many people in Vermont. So we have entertained that idea of seceding and joining Vermont.
All right.
In fact, we once ran a story, I must say, that said we called the governor of Vermont and asked him what he thought about it, and he thought it was a terrific idea.
Of course. He'd get another one or
right.
two representatives.
He thought, yes, that's right. He'd have one more representative to Congress.
All right. Let's go on to your story on the COVID-19 pandemic. Once again, on the cultural scene in Berkshire County, choral groups are going on hiatus.
Yes. I mean, in fact, I have experienced this firsthand because, as I mentioned, I am the chair of the board of Close Encounters with Music, which was planning a world premiere of something we've been working on for 2 years, which involved a children's chorus. And it's going to be at the Mahaley in November, and we realized that we can't have a children's chorus because children are not going to be vaccinated. And I mean, this is not only about children's choruses, but, you know, we couldn't have a chorus, so we have postponed once again our world premiere until we can have a children's chorus. But it's really terrible. I mean, these choruses have, you know, it's been a year and a half that they haven't been able to rehearse and perform.
Yeah, and nothing is worse than inactivity when you're a choral group or even the nonprofit or anything, and you can't do what you do on a yearly and daily basis.
It's just, right. Yeah.
We'll go on to the Berkshire Literacy Network, their 30th anniversary.
Oh, yeah, this is a great organization, actually. They are dedicated to teaching English to immigrants who arrive in the Berkshires, and they've been it's just been a terrific organization for those people who come to the United States and want to and need to learn English, and it's celebrating its 30 years, and we have a great story about it, about profiling some of the people who have benefited from the efforts of the Literacy Network.
Right. Yeah, no, this is a trip, and you know, they are always on the lookout for volunteers.
Right.
And it's, I know many people who have been volunteering for the Literacy Network, and it's, they find it very satisfying because they really are helping people who have come here for a better life but are hampered because they don't speak English well enough. And, you know, and they prepare these people not only to live here but also to become citizens and to vote and participate in the community. And, you know, and they've had a wonderful track record.
All right, we have about 2.5-3 minutes left, and our good friend of the radio station, Todd Mack, of course, Music in Common,
yes,
which was founded in honor of Daniel Pearl, has really right. they're going to really expand what their mission is.
Yes, that's right. That's right. They're launching a racial equity project in the Berkshires, feeling that music is, as they say, is a universal language.
Hence their name, Music in Common. This is really what I mean. You know, Music in Common. I mean, aside from the Friends of Danny Pearl that Todd does every year, but Music in Common was originally started to bring together Israelis and Palestinians to make music
right.
together. So his model fits very well, you know, to racial equity activities.
Right.
And it's a terrific small organization, always struggling for money, but we are, you know, we're very enthusiastic about this organization.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's an organization that has been around for a while now, and I just think it's great that when they're succeeding enough where they can expand their goals and their outreach. And it is true. We have a group around here, the Joint Chiefs, which have been doing this for years, playing music all over the world. Exactly, and it's true. It is a great healer and a great bringer, a bringer together of different people. And I just give once again Music in Common all the credit in the world for what they've done in the past and keeping Danny Pearl's image and name alive, and also now expanding what they do with the world in general, and especially the local impact in general. Yeah.
Yep.
All right, guys. All right. Well, that's another edition of the Berkshire Edge. Of course. BerkshireEdge.com. It's there 24 hours a day, and there's always stuff for you to find out going on. So,
and there's stuff on coming on all the time.
Yeah.
And thank you for the plug about the calendar. And we also have the magazine, Berkshire's Calendar Magazine, which is in circulation, you know, all over, with information about things to do. You know, over the next few months, and the November issue will come out at the beginning of November for the November, December, and winter.
All right. Well, keep up the good work, and we will speak to you next week.
Okay.
All right,
okay,
take care, guys.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Have a good
TheBerkshireEdge.com is the website. That's where you can find them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, TheBerkshireEdge.com.